All right, so here I'm with Mr. Jeff Forehand. He is my very first, and I gotta say, one of the best professors and role models for me. I'm not kidding.
Seriously.
I take after this man in terms of my techniques. He's been the biggest impact in my life in terms of music technology, What made you want to become a professor in the first place?
Well, after getting off the road and spending years and years and years as technical support for a lot of people in the industry, I decided to go back to school and get my degree in music, and to support myself, I started teaching privately, music lessons, drum lessons, mm-hmm. as a drummer. Started teaching privately, and I went, whoa, I like this. I was really connecting with the kids, and that was so fun and fulfilling that I discovered I really liked teaching. And I said, okay, this is what I want to do. But I didn't want to do it at the K-12 level and be a behaviorist. I wanted to teach at a level where students are there because they want to be, not because they have to be. So that's why I chose the college level, and it was the right decision for me because I love it.
Yeah. And speaking of, I remember you when I was taking your classes, I remember your stories when you were younger, you being babysat by Jim Morrison's girlfriend,
right.
Working for and hanging out with Prince. Mm-hmm. What is a story or moment that was mind blowing for you, like the life changer, one of those events that you would never ever forget, impactful in your life?
Probably for me was discovering that Prince was a normal person, you know, a regular kind of guy. I had been with him, for easily 8 months, you know, in the studio doing two albums, putting the tour together from band rehearsals all the way through production rehearsals.
What were the albums?
Love Sexy and the first Batman album.
Wow. Yeah.
So Love Sexy was two albums after Purple Rain, I think, and it went gold. It was, you know, not one of his biggest albums, but it was really I thought it was great. It had great stuff on it, and it was really fun to watch him create and produce. And the Batman album went platinum. But we were on the road in Europe, and I'll try to make this a short story, but the next show got canceled, which was going to be in Rome. We were in Holland, I think we were in Amsterdam, or Rotterdam, and the next show was going to be in Rome, and it got canceled, so the whole tour got to go to Rome, except for me, because Prince was unable to really take time off and do nothing. He just is constantly working. So he wanted to fly to London and get a hotel rooms for me and his entourage, because I was his keyboard tech, and he wanted me to bring the Fairlight and his favorite keyboards, and he wanted to do a remix to a song called I Wish You Heaven, you know, so that it could play in the nightclubs. So we rented the studio for 3 days and worked around the clock doing the remix. And then when we were done, he said, go home and get dressed, we're going out. So I got to, you know, go back, get dressed, jump in his limousine with him and go out with his entourage and hang out with him at a table that was roped off at the Hippodrome, one of the coolest clubs in London, and sit there and have a glass of wine with him and talk like musician to musician. And it was at that point that I realized, okay, this guy's a regular guy. He just is surrounded by people who are on his payroll. Everybody around him is on his payroll, and he is in control of everything in his life. And he has to be wary, and he has to be suspect, and he has to be a little bit withdrawn from people, especially new people in his life, which I was. But by this time, we'd worked so much together, we just started talking about music, musical influences, arranging techniques, women, you know, regular guy stuff.
What were
and that was eye-opening.
What were one of his or at least a couple of his influences as he
Easy. His influences were James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone. I mean, Sly and, of course, his bass player, Larry Graham, and Jimi Hendrix.
Wow.
Those are his.
I can hear the all those elements.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that a lot, and that was interesting to hear. But it was really interesting just to kick it with him with his guard down. He had his guard down.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I can only
imagine. And it was funny, too, because we're sitting at this table that had to be roped off because all of a sudden people in the club who knew he was there started gathering around, and there's this big crowd of people standing outside the roped-off area just gawking and trying to take pictures and stuff.
Okay, these are a little bit more direct.
So wait a minute, before you, to go back to that last question, the short version of that is finding out that Prince was kind of a normal and decent guy on the inside. So that was.
He kind of looked like that. I've watched Purple Rain.
He's a normal and decent guy, but he doesn't show it that easily and that often. Anyway, that's.
That's kind of a I would imagine as a performer you can't show that. You have a persona that everybody wants to see, and you can't be yourself anymore, and you just become a character.
Yeah, especially that's really true, especially with somebody like him. He had an image, he had a persona. And unfortunately, the price tag to fame like that is that you really can't go anywhere other than your own home and be yourself, you know?
That is true.
You know, in his studio, he was himself, and I appreciated that, you know, but in his work and at home and stuff. But when he goes out, you know, he can't go take a walk on the beach. He had to rent a movie theater just to go to a movie, rent the whole thing. Anyway, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I mean, I get that because I read that Janis Joplin. You can tell one of my inspirations. She quasi sold out. I understand that she wanted to do her own thing, but I mean, when you listen to her Pearl album, sure it was a big hit, but that was because I've listened to that album, and it's a little more close to the poppy's side, not as deep as she was when in her
there's always
first
those
albums.
Considerations, you know, and when you're in the business of making music, you also need to make money, you know, so you have to sometimes lean in that direction sometimes, you know.
Yeah. I admire ones who don't.
Me too.
Did you play any instruments when you were younger?
Mm-hmm. I started out. My mom said I started playing drums, or beating on things, her hat boxes and pots and pan lids, when I was 5. But eventually, I started taking piano lessons when I was 8. And that's 3rd grade. And then when I got into 5th grade, I started playing the alto saxophone and played that all the way through 7th grade. And then I got my first band in 8th grade, and then really just started playing drums and singing. And then, of course, eventually learning music and music theory on the piano, you know, which I play and I understand. I don't go out and gig on the piano. I still gig as a singing drummer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it was cool to have studied piano early on and saxophone early on, because when I finally decided to study music, I wasn't foreign to the grand staff and the notes and everything, you know.
That's so boss. Were you in a band? And what kind of band was it?
Well, I've been playing in bands my whole life, you know, and I'm no spring chicken. So I started in 8th grade, was the first band. I think we were called the Teen Beats, and we were a surf band. This is in Southern California. Surf music was real popular at the time.
Oh yeah,
and none of us bothered or singing or.
And when was the '70s, '80s?
Oh, hell no. Let me think about that. How old are you in the 8th grade? I think you're 12.
You're 8th grade, you're about 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, so that was 64, 65.
Oh, wowza.
Yeah. I was born at 52.
Oh, wow.
I'm old as shit. So,
but you're young at heart. You don't.
Well, you guys are the one reason I'm young at heart. You keep me young at heart. I love it. And that's one of the things I love about this job is y'all keep me young. My first band was 64, 65, I guess. And even though I was completely enamored with the Beatles and the Stones and stuff, I hadn't really started singing yet. So it was a surf band, and it was just all instrumental music. But eventually we started singing and learning, you know, the songs of the day. And I've played in every kind of band since then. You know, funk and country and hip-hop and, big horn bands. And
That's
been fun.
It sounds like a boss.
Well, there was a time you could actually make a living playing in a band, even if you're just playing cover tunes. Playing original tunes is a whole other bag. You know, you have to go get the songs recorded, and you have to have a manager, and you want to go get a record deal and all that. And I tried that a couple times, and that never worked well for lots of reasons. Don't want to go into that. But in the 70s, before drum machines and DJs, during the dance craze, during the disco dance craze and nightclub dance craze, nightclubs were open, and I had live music five, six nights a week.
Wow.
So you could go, if you're in a good band, you could go be a house band at a place and play there. They had this, you know, we'd go play at one place for a month and go somewhere else and play for 6 weeks and go back, then go to this place and play a month there and just keep that circuit going on. And at the time, if you didn't have a whole lot of bills to play, which I didn't because I was on my own, I made a living playing in bands.
That's
before drum machines and DJs.
Yeah. Another reason why you're one of the biggest icons in my life. Yeah. I'm not kidding.
I'm humble.
Which school or schools did you attend? Why and what did you study?
That's a good question, because I was fortunate when I first decided to go to school to study music, because I wanted to understand, what do you mean this is in the key of G? What the fuck is that? And I don't know what a B-flat chord is. What are you guys talking about? You know, I didn't understand that. And I mean, I kind of did from my earlier days of sax and piano a little bit, but I really wanted to understand it. So I went to a community college up in Humboldt Schools. So I went to a community college because I was living up in Humboldt County. That's another whole long story, what I was doing up there. But fortunately, and by divine intervention, the music department there was run by two jazzers. Guys that could play the hell out of sax, and the other guy was a trumpet player. And they taught theory from a contemporary point of view. They taught theory in a way that totally made sense to me, and I learned it sitting home at the piano and loved it and was arranging, and it just made all the sense in the world to me, right? So then I transferred to Humboldt State to further, you know, after, which is a 4-year college, to get my music degree. And it was like running into a brick wall, because their theory program was the conventional theory program that most colleges teach, which is studying the music of the Western European common practice period. Nothing wrong with that music, great composers. But they also use a system called the figured bass system, which works for analyzing that music, but it's a system, and it uses a vernacular, terminologies that you never hear outside of academia. And I fucking hated it. It was, what is this junk? You know, using Picardy thirds and, you know, French augmented sixth chord and, you know, plagal cadences. And I'm going, what the fuck is this? And, you know, the guy, I was a hippie at the time, too. I was playing in a rock band, and I had hair down on my shoulders, and we were the hottest band in town. And, you know, the staunch, very conservative instructor or professor was teaching and took me aside and says, you know, you really shouldn't study music. So I got the fuck out of there. So I just went and played music and played in bands for a while, and eventually saved my money and went to the Berklee College of Music in Boston, which was and still is one of the best music colleges on the planet for contemporary music. And that was a stellar experience. But I only stayed, I think, just a year. But But that really helped in terms of ear training and theory. Then I came back to the West Coast, and fortunately at that time down in LA, there was a school called the Dick Grove Music Workshops, which was one of the best music schools on the planet. And it's no longer there because Dick Grove passed away, but he was still alive, and he taught the program that I took, which was the composition and arranging program, which was a year-long, 5-day a week, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day program. And it was like initially boot camp and then grad school. You know, the second half was like grad school for composing and arranging. It was the best thing I ever did. So I did that and got a credential from that. And then I still didn't have a BA, so I had to go back to the typical status quo and get my BA from Sonoma State. And fortunately, there was a couple of good teachers up there that I hung with that I loved. And I bit my tongue, if you know what I mean, and went through the typical theory system and then went up and got my master's in recording arts from Chico.
Hmm. Yeah. Man.
It was fun.
Long journey.
Well, it was good to see both ways of teaching theory. It's really good to see how, you know, Berkeley and Dick Grove did it, and then see how the conventional status quo, you know, theory programs are put together and why. And I even had to teach a third semester theory when I was up at Chico, and boy, that was interesting. Anyway.
Do you do anything else these days besides teaching? What else do you do?
I still play in bands. Mm-hmm. I still really love the creative process, and when I get the time,
you and me both.
I like to write songs. I'm trying to improve my lyric writing because I totally suck with lyrics, and those are really important. So I'm studying lyric writing when I have time. I have a home studio, a pretty nice home studio, and I get in there and piddle about and write and create when I have time. And I'm also producing an African artist, a refugee from the Congo, who got political asylum over here because he was scheduled to be exterminated and escaped. And he came here, and he's a wonderful musician. And he and I get along fabulously. So I'm actually producing and recording him in my studio, and it's really interesting. You know, it's really interesting. Put that on pause for a second. Because it's my mom, and there's some shit going on. Hey, man. I'm just... I'll always play in a band as long as I'm physically able to, because it's in my system, it's in my blood. I don't do it as much as I used to, but that's by choice. You know, and I prefer to only play with people I enjoy playing with and do gigs I don't have to travel too far. And I produce and write my studio. You know?
What are some genres that you've always been into and you love producing?
Heck, I love producing anything good. I love...
Good answer.
I do.
If you asked me that question, I would give you the exact same answer.
Yeah, I mean, when I play, I like to play blues-based, rock and roll, New Orleans-flavored, funk, soul, and, you know, I really have recently fallen in love with the R&B type funk out of New Orleans. And, you know, my favorite music is soul and R&B and funk, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and blues as well. Blues will always be around.
Oh, yeah.
It's always fun to play.
It is.
Yeah, so I'm addicted, and I'll probably be carried out on the drums. playing the drums. That'd be a good way to go. You know?
Yeah. Most definitely.
So is that your last question?
Yeah.
Right, go ahead, man.